Good Wednesday. Today is March the 19th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, I recently caught up with Dr. Alyssa Essman. She is our OSU Extension weed specialist. We talked about a survey that OSU does every year looking for different weed species populations around the Buckeye State to determine which are most problematic and come up with strategies to combat them. We'll have the details of the study after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
I am joined by Dr. Alyssa Essman. Dr. Essman is our state weed specialist. Alyssa, as we take a look back, every year you guys do sort of a survey of the state of what some of the different weed pressures are out there. What'd you find last year?
Yeah, so it finally happened. Water hemp was our number one weed in 2024. So this is something we've really been keeping an eye on in recent years, and we've seen it really creep up the list. When we look at the top five weeds in this pre-harvest survey, in terms of frequency, those are that are most common in field at the end of the season. And of course, water hemp's one we're really concerned about at the end of the season, knowing how much seed it produces and some of the herbicide resistance issues we're having with water hemp. And so that was our number one species, shortly followed by giant ragweed. Continues to be a really pressing issue for us, just a really tough weed to get controlled, you know, has some different resistance issues, really fast growth rate, and it just gives folks a lot of trouble. And then kind of rounding out that list are our grass and foxtail species, mare's tail and volunteer corn, and some of those that continue to be issues in our soybean programs.
Well, I don't know if I take that. Finally, had the water hemp as a good or bad, because we just had it show up on our farm this past year, and it is a booger to control, and something that I had avoided like the plague, but unfortunately it did show up. So as we take a look at some of those weeds, in particular the problem ones, maybe talk a little bit about what we saw last year as an interaction with the weather patterns we had. It was sort of wet for a while, and then especially certain parts of the state turned so dry. How did that impact the effectiveness of herbicides, and then as a result, obviously, the weed pressure we saw?
Yeah, there's a couple issues that can crop up when we think about weed management in times where we have really low precipitation, especially like we did last year in certain parts of the state. One of the concerns, of course, is activation of our residual herbicides. So we're very interested in promoting the use of residual herbicides. We know how critical they are for management of things like water hemp that are a bear if we get them in a post situation. So activation of those was a big concern, knowing we were pretty wet early in the season, and then as we got into the later season, it really dropped off. And so some of the questions there were, you know, whether or not we should apply a residual herbicide at that time. And really looking at the emergence patterns, certain parts of the state where we had that really low precipitation did have lower weed populations, and so there's some questions that come up there in terms of what to target. With emergence, we know where we have really hot, dry conditions, weeds are tougher to kill. Mm-hmm. And so in those situations, you know, optimizing our adjuvant programs to get absorption and coverage really are increased in importance.
Sure, that makes sense. Maybe take us back to just some of those basics when it comes to strategies. You said the adjuvants and making sure we have all the basic things done right so we can really attack those weeds.
Yeah, so first off, we'll start, kind of square one is identification. And that's really important when we think about water hemp and the number of other pigweed species we have. They can hybridize a little bit, which can cause some confusion, but there are some pretty key characteristics that can help us separate, you know, something like redroot pigweed, which has a lower economic concern for us than something like water hemp or Palmer amaranth. So being able to identify it, and then once we're pretty confident in our skills, or maybe, you know, reach out to your extension specialist or educator and help identifying those species, getting out and scouting on a field-by-field basis. That's kind of where we're going back to, knowing, you know, with the way the markets are and prices. We really need to be strategic with how we manage on a field-by-field basis, right? If we have certain farms with different weed problems, knowing those weed problems and getting out and scouting so that we can be strategic with our herbicide program, I think is the best strategy.
Good tips. Again, my guest today is Dr. Alyssa Essman. She is our state weed specialist at Ohio State, talking about what they found in their recent survey of Ohio weed pressures, some of the top finding weeds that are out there, and getting us back to the basics for control. Dr. Essman, thanks for your time and the update today.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. In other agricultural headlines, the National Pork Producers Council elected new officers and board members to lead the organization through the 2025-26 term, and these seasoned leaders will continue to advocate for policies benefiting U.S. pork producers, ensuring the industry's growth, sustainability, and resilience on a national level. The strength of the National Pork Producers Council lies in the leadership and the vision of those who serve. That, according to National Pork Producer Council CEO Brian Humphreys, our newly elected officers and board members bring decades of experience and a deep commitment to advancing and defending the interests of U.S. pork producers. Their leadership will be instrumental as we tackle challenges, drive progress, and ensure a strong future for our industry, he said. Well, this year we have two Ohioans that are taking the leadership roles for the 2025-26 National Pork Producer Council presidency. Dwayne Statler of Macomb, Ohio, has been named president. He's a fifth-generation pork producer. Dwayne operates Statler Family Farms along with his son Anthony, and he's been actively involved in national and state-level agriculture policy discussions and serves as a strong voice for producers on sustainability and environmental stewardship. Also serving is Vice President Pat Hord from Bucyrus, Ohio. Now, as CEO of Hord Family Farms, Pat has led a diversified agriculture operation, overseeing the growth of the family business while remaining involved in industry policy. Pat has been working as a key advocate for U.S. pork producers, shaping policy at a national level through his work with the National Pork Producer Council committees. The National Pork Producer Council is the global voice for the U.S. pork industry, protecting the livelihood of America's 60,000-plus pork producers who abide by ethical principles in caring for their animals and protecting the environment and public health and providing safe, wholesome, nutritious pork products to consumers worldwide. So congratulations to both Dwayne and Pat for being elected to those leadership positions. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.